welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5. Coming up Monday on the program from WVNN, a former colleague of mine, Dale Jackson, will be with us, and also State Representative Matt Simpson. So make sure you tune in on Monday. Big show planned as well for Monday. But join us now on the line, our usual Friday guest. Always a pleasure to introduce him. He represents the folks over in Baldwin County, across the bay there, State Senator Chris Elliott. Senator, how are you today?
I am great. Thanks for having me on again.
Hey, thanks for making time for us. So let's get an update here. How are things going for you, your family, COVID-19, still making it?
Still making it interesting, that's for sure. Things are going well so far. Third day of school in Baldwin County for Baldwin County kids and mine as well. But aside from the mask, everything seems to be pretty much back to normal, as is reported by my kids. The school system being very proactive and looking at things, and things seem to be going pretty well.
Yeah, because I live in Daphne. When I leave, I see the bus stops, the kids there, and they have masks on. Other than that, at face value, it seems things are kind of going as they would otherwise.
Well, and of course, the real testament to that will be weeks and weeks down the road to see how this progresses. But even the reports that are being put out by the county school system and about how many students are not in school or never came to school because they exhibited symptoms seems to indicate that, the parents are taking this seriously as well and doing what they're supposed to do to keep their kids out of school, even if they're showing symptoms. Testing is taking so long to turn around that you almost are having to base this off of nothing but just symptoms in order to make a decision about whether or not to keep your kids home.
Yeah, because it's such a lagging indicator. It takes a while for those test results to come in, and by the time you get the results and you know that you're positive, well, you may very well have you've already exposed people or the classroom to COVID-19. I mean, that seems like the only system or the only option that we have in place. Is there anything better?
I don't think so, unfortunately. In my discussions with the Department of Health and of course, very close discussions with the school board here locally, are that the best thing we can go from right now is going to be symptoms. And of course, that's not perfect, not by a long shot, with a lot of folks that are completely asymptomatic. But if you're relying on a test to determine whether or not you have COVID while you are exhibiting symptoms and still interacting with other people, that's not a good thing. You've got symptoms, stay home, period.
Yeah, it's one thing to be asymptomatic, but to have symptoms, the sneezing or coughing or anything like that, that would tend to make to make things spread a little differently.
Exactly.
Right. And that's, I guess that's the wisdom there. But I assume they got other protocols in place with social distancing, mask, and they're maybe taking temperatures or something like that.
They're doing that. The county school system has installed a number of cameras in each school, thermal cameras that are taking readings of kids as they move about the school, as they come into the school. And if there is a child that shows, that they're running a temperature, and I forget exactly, I think 100.4 sticking in my head for some reason, that may not be completely accurate, but then the nurse is identifying that child as maybe having an issue. And they've got protocol in place that, honestly, I think are as good as it can be. And then on top of that, they're generating a daily report. They're calling it a transparency report that indicates exactly what happened the previous day, how many kids, and what they're seeing, so that parents can be as informed as possible.
Are you hearing anything about this? When they first did the mask mandate for school children, there was a little bit of pushback that, it's hard to manage second graders. Furthermore, make sure they're not goofing off and wearing the mask or wearing it properly or whatever. Has that been an issue? Although it's very, very, very early in all this, have you heard anything like that?
I have a very reliable report from a 7-year-old.
Fantastic.
My son told me that. So he said, "Look, your kids that are the teachers having to stay on to make sure they're wearing it correctly. And that they've got it, got it covered both their nose and their mouth." And I think that's all to be expected. I mean, heck, I've got, problems making sure he's got the same socks on and wearing underwear sometimes. So, that's that's part of, you know, being a kid, and I think that's something that we're going to continue to see.
The challenges of a parent. I'm really looking forward to that. They're setting me up real nicely there, Senator.
You're going to have fun. It's great.
Other than that, everything else, I don't know. Like we're kind of in a place now where we're still in this wait-and-see holding pattern with masks. But since the last time we talked, it does seem as if the trend is maybe in a better direction. I wouldn't say quite positive, but not as bad.
Well, and I think that's going to be what we're going to see moving forward. And we're going to have, you know, we're going to have a wave, if you will, and maybe, you know, I'm a guy from down on the water, maybe the intervals aren't as tight, right? But we're going to see this up and down motion, I think, for a while until a vaccine is ready and on board. And I know that is not comforting to a lot of people who want to say, let's wear a mask, let's shut down, and let's, you know, hunker down for a couple of months. I think this is going to be something that's around for quite a while.
Yeah, and it's just adapting to it. But even if it looks like we're in the clear, it still seems to me that, well, let's just be safe. It's better safe than sorry. Let's continue some of these mandates until we really, really know for sure.
Well, and I think it goes back even more so to personal responsibility. And it is a law of averages. The less people you interact with directly, the less chance you have of spreading this. If it's an activity where you have to be face to face, okay. But if it's one of those things where you can opt for a video conference, if you can opt for a phone call, if you can opt for not being face to face, then that's probably something you ought to look at. And I think if we just look at the math on this and understand the probabilities, then that is going to be as effective as anything else.
Well, I think that, but getting back to that point, I think that's a reluctance. Whatever Governor Ivey or Scott Harris come out, the state health officer, Scott Harris, come out with a new mandate or a new rule or a new guideline or protocol, rolling it back doesn't seem to be as easy as rolling it out. Taking something away God forbid government like taking a step back from its power, to a lot of people in their mind they see this and, oh, this is another thing we're going to be stuck with long probably after this is due. So you understand, tell me this is your sense though, why there's such pushback from some of these things that just seem otherwise not that big of a deal. You could do this, you could survive this way. It's just for a little while. People are skeptical of that whole notion.
Alabamians do not like being told what to do by government. That should not come as a surprise to anyone. And I think that you couple that with some of the data problems that we've had early on, some of the guidance that has changed, in all fairness, because nobody's seen this virus before and it's changing. The guidance has changed. So you have to, you have to wonder, and there is an underlying skepticism, do these folks that are issuing these orders really know what's going on? And I think the answer is, by and large, they don't know everything that's going on. They know some things, and they're making the best decision that they can. But that may prove to not be accurate weeks later, and that breeds doubt in the public's mind about whether or not it's something that they should be doing or that they have to do. I think there's some underlying trust issues as well with those, you know, that are governing that you got to take into account too. You know, is this somebody that you trust to be giving you advice on this or not? And that is a political problem more than anything else.
Well, let me draw this analogy. It's kind of like when the EU or the United Nations or whatever issue some kind of directive, and people in this country are like, we don't answer to this global body here. We don't, and the same to me seems like it should apply to the state where you have the CDC or, you know, they're issuing guidelines or the World Health Organization or whatever big entity you want to use in there. That we voted for the governor, that we voted for the legislature. We didn't get to vote for the state health officer, but we voted these people, and we didn't vote for these big, enormous bureaucracies that are making decisions for us. And that's where you get some of the pushback.
Well, that is true, but it is also true that when the folks that we voted in, the small government conservatives, start acting like big government bureaucracies, that folks start questioning that as well.
Yeah, well, I fully anticipate, though, that when you guys finally get the opportunity to gavel in, probably won't be until 2021 that one of the big things that's going to be done is there's going to be either a revisiting, if not a total overhaul of the system.
There has to be. I mean, there's no question about that. The thought that we can live under emergency powers for months and months, maybe even a year or two at a time, and that is somehow or another permitted and legal, where the executive has as much unchecked and unbridled power as they currently do, is not something that the people of Alabama signed up for. And to the extent that is something that is in the Emergency Powers Act, that's going to be changed. There's no question in my mind.
I mean, isn't that the fear why we have it? And I guess I'm asking you to speculate here, but while we haven't had a special session to really do with anything, just given the Republican majorities and the numbers, you have the numbers in both the House and the Senate to override whatever Governor Ivey, or if she called a special session, whatever parameters she set in place. Is that why we're not seeing the legislature called in to deal with any of this? That you know, we may be being told, hey, everything is fine, we don't need a special session. Or in addition to that, there's the health risk, we don't want to deal with that. That might have something to do with it, why we're not seeing maybe more activity there on that end.
Well, Jeff, you'll have to ask the governor why in the world she's not calling a special session. But there are plenty of crucial issues that did not get solved in the last session before we adjourned due to coronavirus that absolutely need to take place. I mean, there are economic development incentive bills that need to get addressed. There are huge projects, you know, across the state that are definitely dependent on that being addressed, and those expire prior to the next session. They need to be addressed. There are liability concerns, Senator Orr's bill, that absolutely need to be addressed. There are issues with the prisons that need to be addressed. There are issues with taxation on the stimulus payments and PPP loans. I filed that bill last session that need to be addressed. Otherwise, they'll have to pass in the very first days of the session in March to get done between the first day and when business tax filings are due. I mean, all of those forgivable PPP loans are currently taxable. Think about that for small business impact. We need to change that. I cannot imagine why in the world the governor would not go ahead and call us back into special session unless it is exactly as you suppose, and that is they don't want us in there because they do not want us addressing the emergency powers that she currently has. And I think that's a shame.
Right. Or even it seemed like the end of the tail end of the last session, the CARES Act money too, you know, and the governor's office thought that they were going to be able to be distributing that. But as long as I'm not the only one that thinks this is kind of a weird time right now not to at least even engage in discussions about a special session, that it is, whenever you bring it up or it's talked about around the governor, it's a non-starter, it's off the table.
And you have to wonder why in the world is that? And the only logical answer is that she is afraid of what the legislature will do if they come back. And that is the only thing that makes sense to me.
Right. Are you hearing from anybody else? Any of your colleagues that are like, hey, should we at least be in Montgomery discussing the economic incentive issue or this prison thing that seems like it could be really big if it's not nipped in the bud? But is anybody saying, hey, why aren't we convening a special session?
I think that my colleagues are of similar mind and understand that the governor is worried about what we may do, what bills we may take up, and frankly, what bills there is broad support to take up that might have to do with her authority power. And you're exactly right, the money that she currently has control over, and whether or not there'd be any attempt to make adjustments to that. Those are concerns that I think exist. Again, I cannot figure out a way to justify not calling the legislature back into session. And to the extent that somebody says it's because of health risk, I simply don't buy that. I mean, we are sending our kids back to school. The absolutely least we could do is ask the legislature to come back to work.
Well, Senator, just real quick, we got to wrap it up here, but it's going to happen eventually. You guys are going to be back into session at some point in time. This cannot be kicked down the road indefinitely. So, like, it seems to me it would behoove the governor's office to say, okay, let's get at the table, negotiate something. We'll call it a special session. But as far as I can tell, maybe you're privy to something that I'm not, that there's just no appetite for that whatsoever.
Well, and I think you're right. I would agree that the governor should sit down with the legislature and try to figure out a way to discuss these types of issues ahead of time and come up with a solution that everybody's comfortable with. But that has not been the MO of this governor. That has not been the MO of this chief of staff. And that does not seem to be the way they are going to handle this.
Senator, we got to leave it there. But as always, thank you for making time for us on Friday mornings. We appreciate it.
Absolutely, Jeff. Thanks again.
That was State Senator Chris Elliott kind of talking about where we are right now and why we're not seeing more activity going on in Montgomery. Seems like a prime time for it. Got to take a break. We'll come back, wrap it all up. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Mona tried to tell me to stay away from the train line. She said that all the railroad men drink up your blood like wine.
Hey, I was country. Country wasn't cool. Yeah, I was country.
And welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5. Coming up on Monday, Dale Jackson from WVNN and State Representative Matt Simpson and some guests to be named later. So make sure you tune in on Monday, as I have almost made it through my second week of programming here.
That's right.
I feel very good at where I'm at, but I don't want to get too cocky just yet. I'm still like double secret probation over here. Sean Sullivan, you hear him in the mornings here on Mobile Mornings and Midday Mobile here in just a few minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I defer to you on all things outdoors because I don't really, I don't
hunt. You spend as little time outdoors as possible.
And I would like to spend more time outdoors. It's just, well, it's very low on my list of priorities. But I was talking to somebody yesterday, and with COVID-19 taking away college football.
Mm-hmm.
We were talking about state parks are going to see off the charts, participation or attendance or whatever, but also outdoors activities. And I know you may address this in a later future program, but the idea that we're going to see more people in the woods come deer season, more
sure.
people out on the lakes fishing.
Oh, it's already happening. We've talked about it in the past on the Outdoor Show. Yeah, we'll talk about it some tomorrow morning when Mike Ward and I have FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors at 7. But there's some real things. There's some real test cases. Two of them I can point out real quickly here in Alabama. Number one, the turkey season numbers. So we were under quarantine during turkey season. A lot of people couldn't go to work. Now, I know this isn't like college football, but they couldn't go do other things. The harvest levels were way higher than normal because people had more days that they weren't doing whatever else they were doing. And then the red snapper early closure is a prime example of that. The number of boats, the number of trips per day went up by hundreds from year to year. And that's why we reached our quota so fast for snapper, because of that. So this fall with no college football and then some people working from home and doing different things, public lands will have a lot more people on them in the state. Lakes will have a lot more. The DCNR is already talking about how to prepare for that. So maybe we can do more on this down the road. I get you some guests from DCNR. You
know, it's a fascinating phenomenon just culturally and what that means. But we got to call it a day. Everyone has a good weekend. Headed off to Sean Sullivan here, Midday Mobile. This has been the Jeff Porch Show at FM Talk 106.5.